Hello, hello. Welcome to our webinar. Here we are with Ivan. Ivan shares some of the similar things. He was born in Sofia, Bulgaria. He's actually 1 year younger than me, so I'm the senior here. As I'm focused on digital marketing, Ivan is focused on self-growth and coaching people and helping them break through the mental barriers and getting to know each other. So Ivan, give us your brief introduction and bio.
Well, like you said, I was born and raised in back then communist Bulgaria. I was 16 when democracy came, but I was 28 when I left. So the interesting thing is, in the first 16 years, I was, as I believe you were, I was unknowingly conditioned to follow in the party lines, to not think for myself, to not be a free thinker. And I was told what to think, basically. And so I didn't know that at the time, because if you're a fish and you spend all your life in water, you don't know that you're in water. That's what it is. But my eyes were opened later when I, when the wall came down and we were exposed to more, and especially after that, when I immigrated to the United States. And I was 28 when I immigrated. I competed in natural bodybuilding there. Eventually, I opened a small specialty bakery, which I had for 3.5 years. And then I closed it down, and I was married to a fantastic person, but then we separated and divorced. We're still best friends. And then I left the United States in 2018 for what I thought was going to be just a couple of months to regroup and go back. And I haven't been back since. Eventually, my journey took me all the way to Malaysia, where I worked for an amazing company with young people from over 50 countries. So I was exposed to, first of all, Malaysia is a Muslim country. So I was exposed to different culture, Hindus, Muslims, and Asian cultures, and then working with people from over 50 countries. That was just amazing. And my mind opened up to degrees that I didn't even know possible. And mind you, I was 45 or 46 at this time. So I wasn't in my 20s, but we never stop discovering ourselves. We never stop growing. And eventually, that's where I met my second partner, and we came back to Europe, and we established ourselves in Spain. We had our child here. I have a 2-year-old son, and so now I'm doing what you were doing some years ago. I am investing time with my son so that he doesn't go through what I went through with my father and my parents, or the things I missed. So in other words, I don't want to pass on a lot of the crap that I got from down the line. And I want to also expose him to levels of love that I wasn't exposed to. And in the meantime, I'm also supporting myself and supporting my son and his mom, and doing the best I can in the world, helping others with identity crisis, especially purpose-driven high achievers who get disenchanted with what they've been doing in the last decade or 2 decades, and all of a sudden things change and they no longer find that this is aligned with who they are, or rather who they are becoming. But they find themselves in this dark tunnel of not knowing what's going on and what's next. And that's where I come in and I help. And I also, as a reflection of my journey, I help people with aligning to their true essence and who they truly are. And that is popular by the term authenticity. And I use it for marketing reasons. But what it really is being aligned with your most organic, natural, fair trade certified inner signature of being. Anyway, I'll stop confusing people here, and I'll turn it back over to you.
No, you're doing great.
A lot of confusing people, but Now you can confuse them a little bit, and then I can come back in if you want.
Surely we'll keep confusing each other and the people. And it was a funny thing. Beautiful. Because our planning session for this, when we had, we talked about all sorts of things, but the number one rule was I have nothing scripted, nothing prepared. I just did buy a mini course, so I know what we're talking about. And so I went through most of it, and just the rest of it is about our journey and some things we talked about on LinkedIn. And so, you know, whatever we feel like confusing people by is fine today. It's basically a improv, live improv. So
I love it.
But the thing was about the child, and that's an interesting one, because we did have similar, like a sort of a very, how would you say that, disconnected relationship with our parents, because they provide for you. They give you certain things. Well, you have a place to live, and they'll give you the clothes and the food. And I think in communism, for the most part, I'm not saying everybody, of course, but I think the communism has a certain impact on it, because people have sort of less to worry about on the everyday basis, other than just stealing stuff from the government. As the saying goes, if you don't steal from the government, you're stealing from your family. That was a saying in Czech Republic. So that's what they were. That was the primary objective of most people in the country at the time. But I think that the passion for bringing up the kids was not there, and the nurture and stuff. And I was lucky enough, because for the most part, I was brought up by my grandmother, who was a World War II survivor, basically. She was born in the 1920s. She took care of her younger siblings and stuff. So she was a very nurturing person. So I had that contact, but she was much older. So there was not, you know, the age difference kind of limits people. You know, when you have kids older, when you're in older age, it's kind of tougher. You know, like she was really like, she was what, 50s, in the 50s and 60s, when was supposed to be the ideal time, while my parents were in their 30s, but basically partying. And they only, the one thing that I never did get from the parents is for any appraisal for achieving. So it was like, you always strive to make them happy as a child, but you never can, because they don't care. And they just, you know, like, oh, you know, they'll never praise you. Well, you do something wrong, they're right there to strike you down. But, and that's the one thing that I said to myself. I was like, you know, I didn't like this, and this is not what I'm going to do with my son. And so, I basically, my work schedule when he was born and started, especially when he turned 6 and he started playing hockey, was I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, sometimes even 4:30 for him to get him to practice. Then I got him to school by 8. Then from 8 to 12, I was able to work. And at 12 o'clock, I again pick him up and take him to early practices, because the younger hockey teams, they practice right after lunch. So, and then basically the day was over at 8 o'clock when he was finished with schoolwork and dinner and after practices, and then I could work again from 8 to midnight. So, but that was my schedule. That was my choice. And I was doing the translation, so I had a sort of a free schedule. And in the afternoons, when off hockey season, we just spent outdoors and stuff like that. And I told him all the time, I says, you know, I want to go out with you. I want to spend the bike rides. And he has that support, that feel there. That was always there. I was like, I'm never going to leave you, you know. And if something, you know, if he has to go someplace, I'll go there with him. I'll be nearby. So that kind of is different. And now I see in him, because he's 18, he's going to be 19 this year, we do have a very strong relationship, despite the fact that we had to go through basically all along the way. I went through a 10-year custody battle, which is never easy, but never did I transfer it on to him, sort of what I felt, you know, what we had been going through, kind of shield the kids from that, you know. Whereas in my childhood, it was more like the parents were fighting on a daily basis. Cops were there every other week. So I was like, you know, and that's what made me decide. I was like, I'm not going to, I don't want to keep that relationship going, because it would be just very controversial, and let me focus on bringing him up. And by me separating from his mother made me a better father, and gave him a better childhood, because he didn't see that direct conflict in the household. And I think that's important.
You mentioned some really valuable things here, and what I loved hearing is that you didn't make your son a reason for whatever hardship you were going through or whatever you went through with his mom, you kept that separate from him. And a lot of us don't get that lucky in life. We witness things, and even if they're not said directly, even if it's indirect, we all know this. It's so easy with children because we don't have the reasoning capacity. It's not developed yet. In fact, up until about 12 years of age, we don't have the capacity to operate in beta waves, which is the logical, the reasoning mind. And up until 25, we're still growing the neocortex, the executive function of the brain. And so literally children, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, they're still pretty much functioning on a pure subconscious mind. So whatever is introduced, whenever they witness, it's implanted and it goes right in. I'm watching my son now. It's so easy for him. He's exposed to 5 languages and he's learning 5 languages, and it's so easy. I mention a word and it's an obscure word, and then a half a day later, he'll say it. We'll pass by the object, he says it. And I'm trying to learn Spanish and I'm struggling with it. And he's learning like so easy. Why? Because there is no conscious mind. There is no critical mind. There is no judging. There is no evaluating. It just goes right in. But same with things we witness when we're children. So a lot of us were not that lucky, and we didn't get to be graciously and in a very mature way kept away from turning into the reason why things didn't go well with our parents. And sometimes we're even overtly blamed. You're the reason for that. One of the worst things a child can hear, and I'm not saying that you heard that or I even heard that, but I know there are people, I've been around people who share that they've heard this many times during their childhood, is you're not wanted. You are not wanted, or it's your fault. These are two of the worst things a child can hear. Then they'll go through their entire life not knowing why they're self-sabotaging. Well, if they're not wanted, of course they'll have to create their reality in a way where they're experiencing all the time that they're not wanted for their lifetime. Yes, so what I'm saying is, I know we're going into a bit of a personal development here, but I'm relating it to what you shared about shielding your son in a very mature way, in a very wise way, from not introducing some insecurities and limitations early on into him that he would otherwise have battled with for decades after that. So congratulations, man.
Yeah, it's important. And this is how it was basically the introduction, because this kind of drove my life for most of it anyway, until he was born. And then through him, I started realizing different things. But the hardships in the family and then, you know, in the growing up and having a stepsister and so whatever, it was complicated. And, you know, as a child, you try to tackle with it. And then this is what brought me to have actually, and this is what we get into, this self-growth and this, you know, self exploration, you know, and basically you have to discover yourself and you have to get your own stuff out. And I found that to be through martial arts, really, and meditation. And, you know, I had a spiritual teacher back in high school and early college, basically. I only did 3 semesters because I went out for business, like I said, but didn't want to go on the employment route. I was like, oh, I'm always going to be able to take care of myself. And part of that is, I guess, even in the upbringing with the parents and stuff, because I didn't have everything laid out for me and they were not going to, I was not going to ever inherit anything. So it was like, well, you take care of yourself. And so I got onto this journey of philosophy and I tried all sorts of meditations and philosophies. And then I did find a spiritual teacher, a Zen teacher, through our Gojiru karate house in New York. And I started deeply meditating and when I was about 18, 19, something like that. I got into this, you know, you get the self-discovery in that, in meditation happens that, and I know you had that, we touched upon that, you had that later, is you get to be in sort of a sync with the universe. And then you better understand multiple angles at the same time, and you're able to tackle them and kind of step away from the big issue. So despite the fact that for me, it impacted me a long time, I was able to also step away from that and achieve things without having to be burdened by it. So that was kind of an important thing in my life, to have a coach, a teacher that helped me grow into a, I guess, mentally fully developed individual and get more in touch with everybody and everything in the world.
Yeah, well, my teachers didn't appear. I mean, teachers of this caliber, teachers who will help me turn the journey in and explore the inner journey, which is what really matters, because the outer reality circumstances are a reflection of our inner world and how we view ourselves and how we perceive the world, with a certain delay, of course. But I didn't understand that until my early 40s. And that's when I worked with my first coaches. And later on, I found my role models, and they demonstrated to me what it is like to live in full alignment with who they are. And one of them was in the United States. He's still there. And another one was in Australia. And they both demonstrated to me the value of being yourself and living according to your own principles and values and wisdom and in alignment with your own path, so that you're not swimming upstream all the time, but you're actually relaxing downstream and you're just pedaling enough so you're not hitting the rocks, so you're still navigating a little bit, but it's nothing like living against your nature and feeling like you live to make everybody else happy, so that you continue being included, you continue being liked, or in other words, not being rejected, disliked, and disapproved of, and judged. And so this was demonstrated to me much, much later. I was in my early 40s. And so the biggest chapter of my journey has happened in the last literally 10 years. So you're lucky to have started your journey much earlier than that. But it is what it was. I'm not making anything wrong, because we always get what we need, which is oftentimes not what we want, but it's always what we need. And so it doesn't matter what I wanted at the time. I always got what I needed. If I had gotten some of the things I wanted earlier, I wouldn't have been able to appreciate them or extract the wisdom from them. And I would have kept repeating the lessons, because it's how it works. And so that invites a level of acceptance and inner peace. And so I'm in perfect peace with how things went for me. And because of how they went, that's the reason why I'm here today and why we have this conversation.
Yeah, no, for me, it was earlier because, again, you stayed in the old country for a much longer time anyway. And for me, we got to the U.S. when I was 12. And basically nothing changed. It was just the same turbulent parenting relationship that always was. It was a lot of friction, fights, arguments, divorces. We experienced three as a child, actually. And so I knew that was not a setting for me. So, you know, and I went out and I was in the U.S. And especially in the 80s, it was a very free thinking, open world, and especially the Western world. And coming from Europe, it was a big difference. And that's why, and I was seeking actively, of course. So that's why I got early, because I got exposed to the opportunities early. But it doesn't matter if you're 20, 18, 15, or 70. You know, it's just a matter of, like you said, it's the path. It's you're never going to get what you want, but you're going to get what you need, because, like I always say, things always turn out the way they're supposed to. You may not like it, but that doesn't matter. It's supposed to be that way. And in retrospect, you're going to see why you got that, what you got. You don't see it now. Say, damn, why is this happening to me? Well, because you need it to happen to you in order for you to move on, to progress, to grow. And we may not understand it. May get us mad, like, oh, why did my car broke down today? Well, because if your car didn't break down, maybe later on you would be in a car accident that day. And maybe that's just life protecting you from what that happened. And you're like, and so many times, you know, you see this. This is just a one example off the top of my head. But this is the way that works in stages. You presented what you need. And once you're in sync with that and you learn to accept it, you're good to go. You're never really going to be mad at yourself or at the world. And you're not going to start blaming others for it because you know you're controlling it in a sort of way.
Yeah, beautiful stuff. And you touched upon so many interesting things here. And I think it's worth investing a little bit of a few seconds or minutes, whatever it turns out to be, into this, what you just said. You always get what you need, which is not necessarily what you want at the time, but it is always what you need. And it sounds beautiful. And I know I wanted to believe it for a long time, and it sat well in my headspace, but it didn't drop in the form of wisdom for a long time. And it was because I didn't understand why. Why? What do you mean it's what I need? And it's this. We think we live or we exist because of these human journeys that we based on our desires and our wants. And in the West, they're pretty much all based on achievement. It's from very early on, it's not our fault. I mean, we're conditioned that way. Go to school, go to college, get a job as a high paid professional, attorney, a doctor, you know, one of these, and then make sure you work hard for 2-3 decades so you can retire early, or you can retire with a lot of money. The old story. I mean, I don't even know if anybody still believes this story, but I still see young people going through this route. And that's the achievement route. And it prepares people to think that what they're here for is to create something big in their lives. And then when they create, when they secure their lives, they want to create something big for humanity. They want to leave a legacy. They want to create something bigger, write a book, whatever. That's not what we're here for. What we're really here for is to, and I'll say this, and I know a lot of people will be just like, oh my God, that's so, but it doesn't matter because I know that to be true now. And I'm not going to go into how I know, but I'll say that I know. And that's where I'll stop. But why we're really here is a couple of reasons. One, the biggest one is we're here to remember how to love unconditionally. Because that is our default state. And when we jump into these little suits, meat suits, we have to forget. And the reason why we have to forget is because that's the only way we can have experiences. That's the only way we can go through exploration and discovery so that we can rediscover ourselves from a completely new perspective in this lifetime. So we have to have the amnesia. We have to forget everything, but we are coming from love. We're coming from unconditional acceptance. That's what we are. And that's what we are here to remember again. We're also here to work through some stuff from past lives, some stuff from this life that we inherited from early childhood, especially mostly that's not serving and that we're invited to let go of. And we're here to have an exhilarating life. We're here to feel fully alive as often as possible. And we're also here to find our way back to full alignment, or to our authenticity, to our gut feeling, to our connection with our wholeness, with our full self, not just the egoic identity. And I can develop all these, but I don't know if that's where we want to go in the conversation, because these are all rabbit holes that can take hours and hours and hours. The point is this.
Like I said, we said we have an hour, you know, and you were like, well, I'm not sure if,
yeah, well, half of it is gone.
Too long enough. Like, we're just getting into the fact, like I said, don't worry, Ivan. I think an hour, if we go hour and a half, is no problem. But, like, you know,
I have to jump off before that, because
I know
I have commitments, like, exactly the topic, baby.
The topics you're talking
about. The point is this. And thank you for giving me the freedom to just riff on whatever my soul wants. The point is this. We think that we are here to follow the path that was laid out for us, oftentimes unknowingly, by societal stereotypes, by cultural expectations, family expectations, our loved ones, and we don't even know it oftentimes. And sometimes our own path, looking around other people and thinking, well, this is what I should also do. This is the path, especially the stereotype of success in the West. And if you ask most people what is success, they don't even know. And that's an interesting question. I challenge people that. In fact, my post today on LinkedIn is exactly about that. What is success for you? And here it is for me. And so I list exactly what it is for me.
And I'll give you an answer. It's, for me, happiness.
Yeah, there it is. Perfect. But it's not money and a corner office in New York. And, you know,
it could be.
Exactly. It could be, as long as you know it and you know it's really yours. Exactly. Nothing wrong with that. As long as it's really yours, it's not somebody else's and you assume that it's yours and you want to make yourself feel like it's yours, but it isn't. And you feel that internal disconnect, you feel that misalignment. And so people go and something happens and they go, how is that something I need? Well, it is what you need based on these higher journeys. Not on what you think you want based on your achievement journey and how you've laid out your little goals up until some egoic destination that will make your ego happy because it controlled the entire journey up until that point. But it does nothing for your soul most of the time. So that's the reason why. You get what you need, and it's based on these higher purposes, and because you have to forget what they are, and I just implied what they are, but you have to forget so that you can have the experience. Because think about it, if you remembered everything, then nothing would be a surprise, nothing would be a learned lesson. Why? Because you already expected it, you knew what was going to happen. There is no thrill in that, there is no excitement. And we come here to experience excitement, to experience passion, to experience discovery, exploration. And so we had to forget. So you had to forget what you needed. That's what I'm saying, people. So working with what you wanted, that's not what's informing where you're really going. And so when somebody says you got exactly what you needed, that's what they mean. And most often than not, you will know what you needed only looking in the rearview mirror of your life, only in retrospect, and oftentimes many years later. You know, I'll mention here something that I heard from Mo Galdat, this amazing, amazing guy who was one of the top people at Google X, that experimental part of Google where they play with super crazy stuff. And he was saying, as far as I remember, I listened to a podcast. He said, we developed a tool. He didn't say what it was. It was some secret stuff they were working on, which could completely delete somebody's worst traumas. And they contacted 10,000 people who were volunteers to participate. But they had to issue a disclaimer. If you go through this, your trauma, your worst traumas will be completely erased, like they never existed. But along with that, all the lessons you learned, all the wisdom you learned or came to you because of that, who you became, the people that came close to you, the relationships, all of that will be deleted as well. So that's the caveat. And he said, I don't remember if it was 97 or 98% of the people said, no, I'm going to stay with my traumas. I don't want that. And so we get to appreciate what we've been through in the future, but not at the moment. And only in the future, or only in the present moment that we call future now, but it'll be a present moment at the moment, and the now will be the past. We go, wow, if this didn't happen, I would have never met you, or I would have never secured this job, or I would have never created this amazing business. I would have never had this revolutionary idea and changed so many lives if this didn't happen. And so that invites a lot of maturity and inner peace and acceptance. I love sentence. It's a sentence to live by, which I lifted from one of my biggest mentors. He said, I live in peace with what is, while I remain fully committed to living an extraordinary life. So there are two parts. I live in perfect peace with what is, meaning what was in the past and what the anxieties are about the future, what the worries are about the present. Look at this. That's my Zoom creating these balloons.
All right.
So I live at peace with what is, with life, basically, while I remain committed to living an extraordinary life, meaning I'm not attached to how that would look like, but that is my intention. So if I have any expectations, they're very soft expectations. I don't insist on knowing how exactly it must look like. And I'm open to discovering what that might look like based on what I really need for my soul's journey, not on what I think I need. And by I mean my egoic persona, yeah, the controlling part, the afraid part, the one that's keeping distance from everybody else, the one that's experiencing separation and lack of love. All right, I'll shut up here.
No, definitely. You're good. The balloons, you timed them perfectly too.
Yes. I wasn't trying, but
that's what's
happening on Authentic Life TV.
Exactly. The balloons came in right with the quote that you meant to emphasize. And the balloons came through.
There you go.
I can time
all kinds of things. Well, this was purposeful now, right?
This was a controlled event.
Came from the controlling part.
But your ideas, or whatever you now, what you want to call it, your segment now that you said you mentioned, it brings out one other thing that I always think is very important. And this is something in our lives that helps us grow and that helps us be free and to find ourselves is, and one thing that blocks us a lot of times is regrets. And the regret of like, well, I should have done this earlier, you know. Why did I make this decision back then? And why did this happen this way back in 10, 20, 15, 20, 30 years ago? And people carry that with them, having regrets. Whereas for me personally, it works with the way I understand regrets and why I don't have them. It's like people are like, well, what do you think? What would you do if you went 20 years back? I'm like, what would you do different knowing what you know now? I was like, well, that's the problem. Is I can't change what happened back then. And I made the decision that I made. Yeah, now I see it's wrong, but I didn't know that back then. I made the best decision possible based on the circumstances that were and facts that were available to me at the time. So if I go back 20 years, I would still make the same decision. So why should I regret it now? Now that I know it, you know, it's like everybody's a war, you know, it's like the sofa coaches, you know, like, oh yeah, well, you know, from the outside, and you know, after the game, obviously he should have went to the left instead of right. It's, yeah, well, it's easy for you to tell afterwards, but yeah, this is an important part that people just have a lot of regrets about bad decisions they made, but you know, learn to live with them, and this is what makes you grow. And that brought me to the second part is I'm a big movie guy, so basically a walking movie library. Like, oh, did you see? I'm gonna watch a movie. I'm like, well, okay, I'm gonna watch a good movie. And I'm like, well, give me a decade, give me a genre, give me actors, give me what I know everything. But like, what are you looking for? It's like, give me a good movie. Well, how many you want? You want 100 or 500? There's so much good stuff. So anyway, this brings me to the one very deep moment in Star Trek, which is, and I read about it a lot, how it was the worst Star Trek out of all of them. The original series was the Star Trek V, The Undiscovered Country, where one guy named Cybok walks around and he gets followers to his cause by telling him, I'm going to take away your pain. What's your biggest pain? Share it with me and follow me because I'll take care of it for you. And he comes to Captain Kirk, and Captain Kirk, he presents him his dying father and all this and that wrong decision he made or whatever else. And Captain Kirk turns to him and he says, no, thank you, Cybok. I'm going to go back to jail. I'm going to be a danger to you because I'm not going to be your follower because you can't take away my pain. I don't want to get rid of it. It's mine. It's not for you to take it. I own it. I am a starship captain because of the pain. Without the pain, I wouldn't be me. And so that was very deep. And that's exactly ties into what you were saying. So,
man, if you allow me to say a couple of words on that, I'd be
go ahead.
Very elated. First, you pointed out so beautifully, and I really appreciate your philosophy and your wisdom on that part. When somebody asks you, if you could go back 20 years, what would you change knowing what you know today? This is already a flawed question because if you go back and change something, then you wouldn't be who you are today, being able to know what you know today, so you can go back and change what you wanted to change. So the only reason why you have the wisdom to give to the past self is because of the past self. So if anything, you go back and say, I so much love you and appreciate you because of who you are today, what you are, what you're doing, or what you're failing to do. That is why I can come from the future back to you today. That is why I have the wisdom I have. So thank you. I love you. Appreciate you. That's all you say. Because if you could go back and change something, then you wouldn't be here. Over here 20 years later in a position to ask the question. Yeah. You may ask it from another timeline to a past self, but you're not going to ask it from this position. So it's already flawed. But one of the three or four biggest revelations that I had, of course, mentors. I didn't stay up all night or all week, come up with these things. I'm not that smart, but I've had powerful, amazing, enlightened mentors. And one of these few things or philosophies or understandings, which contributed immensely to my inner peace, because most, if not all of us, struggle with hurt from the past. We just carry that hurt with us in every present moment. And by the way, the past does not exist, because the only time there is past is from a present memory that we call the past. So the past keeps being recreated in every present moment. There is no past. If I told you go to the past, you wouldn't get up from the chair and go to the next room and say, hey, Ivan, I'm in the past. I'm waving from the past. No. There is no going to the past. There is no past. There is only a present moment. And in each present moment, there is a thought that recreates the past. But the point is this. In the past moment, when you did something that you regretted later, or you failed to do something you regretted later, the saying goes like this, and it's again from my mentors. You couldn't have done it differently. You couldn't have done it in any other way because you didn't. That's the only proof. You couldn't have done it differently because you didn't. Because in that particular moment, you did not have the choice. You might have had a minute later, 5 minutes later, a decade later. In that particular moment, you did not have the choice. You could have not chosen differently. And maybe something, you did something, and maybe 5 minutes later, your conscious mind caught up with you and you exited the subconscious program that made you do what you did. And you went, what did I just do? What did I just say? Again, that's the you that now has a choice. But the one that did whatever she did or he did 5 minutes ago, they didn't have the choice. And so it's regrets about what you did or failed to do are futile because at the moment, you couldn't have done it differently, period. And this is a universal law. And if it's not, I'm making it a law today.
Well, it definitely goes with the old saying, is you can't step into the same stream twice.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's how it goes. Exactly. I mean, time flows and so is water. And if you pick up your foot and put it back down, it's a different stream. I'm stepping the same. No, it's different because the rocks moved, the water moved. There may be a fish flowing by. And I was like, no, it's just, you're in a moment, it's passing. And if you go back and try to work with regrets and say, well, you know, I should have done, well, do it now. Because then in 20 years, you're going to say, well, you know, I should have done it back then. Well,
you know what I practice and what I teach and guide my clients is to stop saying, I did this in the past or I failed to do this in the past. I ask them to refer to that past version as he or she so that they can create that separation because it wasn't them. I is who's talking to me right now. But that, even if it were yesterday, it's a completely different person. You've had, every day you have 60,000 plus thoughts. Most of them change you. 5 minutes from now, you're a different person. You're no longer that person. You've lost millions of cells because they died and they were replaced with other cells. Even your body's not the same. You're on so many levels, mentally and physically, you're not the same person like who you were 5 minutes ago, let alone yesterday, let alone 5 or 10 years ago. And so I asked them to refer to that version of me, he or she, that past version of me. And this creates a separation and they feel it. They learn how to separate the past from this eternal present moment and how to extend not only forgiveness to that person, because again, they didn't do anything wrong. At the time, they did the only thing they could have done because nothing else was available as a choice to them. So they haven't done anything wrong. Only a future version will judge them as having done something wrong. But knowing that, every time you think about a past version of you, the main energy, the main frequency must be appreciation and gratitude for who they were and what they've done. Even if by judging today, they've messed up. That's why we're here, by the way. That's how we learn. We mess up. We're not here to be happy all the time because there is not much exploration. And by the way, for all these people who are so tilted towards being happy all the time, if you were happy all the time, then one day you'll just be in the gray area, because if you never experience deep sadness, deep sorrow, you never know what deep happiness is. That's the only way you can recognize and feel yourself that way, is because you've experienced the polarity of it. So if you want to be happy all the time, there will come a day when this will become your normal and it won't be happy anymore. So it is a requirement that you experience the polarities, because that's why you're really here. And by the way, I'm not going to tell the story right now, but that is how you experience yourself as fully alive. And that is one of your bigger purposes, to live an exhilarating, amazing life. And what that means is to feel fully alive as often as possible, even if that's sadness sometimes.
No, absolutely. And one of the best things, again, in my teenage years was the discovery of the yin and yang symbol. And that is like the perfect symbol, I think, ever. And I don't think that can be outmatched by anything, because there is even a meditation you can do just watching it and thinking about it. Because the two fish symbol, right, it's called, and you have one color, second color, and then each one includes the color of the opposite. And if you just sit there and think about how everything's connected, how day would not exist without night, how night would not exist without day, how happiness would not exist without pain. And, you know, like, oh, I want to get rid of all pain. You know, it's not, you know, it's actually something that I've read about, again, in my deep study years, is it's not impossible to get rid of physical pain. You can meditate your way and just stop feeling any pain your body has. And there's a story about a guy that actually meditated so deeply, and he got into this trance mode where he felt no pain. But then when he was like 50, he died of a massive heart attack. Why? Well, because he didn't feel it. He just died. He says, how did you, you know, and it's, that's just, thank you for my pain, because I know there is something wrong with me and I should work on it.
Exactly. Pain asks you to move away from something you don't want. And by the way, pain, physical pain, is experienced in the brain. It's not experienced where it hurts.
Right.
It's experienced here.
And you can shut it off.
Therefore, you can manage it. But, you know, that's a hack. You know, if you have to do these hacks, then maybe you're very advanced. I don't want to be that advanced for sure.
No, exactly. I'm just saying that as a point to emphasize what you were talking about, how pain and how people always want to be happy, joy. No,
but even a little bit, just to add to this, I'm sorry if I'm jumping in, the yin and yang, you're absolutely, I'm in alignment with everything you said. This is the symbol to live your life by, and to extract wisdom from, and to lean in for inner peace. You know, I'm sure you've heard the notion of the shadow aspect of a human. You know, all these known traits that we don't want, and all the unknown deeper things that we don't even know, they're not conscious to us, that are lurking deep in our subconscious mind, that are causing self-sabotage and sabotaging our lives.
Oh yes.
And people go, you know, I'll get rid of my shadow. No, that's not the point. You are a whole being when you accept your shadow, not when you get rid of it. You cannot get rid of it. Your wholeness exists in integrating all these dark aspects of you that you're now denying. And this is exactly the symbol of yin and yang. That's the, in the black fish, there is the white piece. In the white fish, there is the black piece.
Yep.
And that's, we all contain all of it.
And that's the only way the world works and can
exactly
work. And that's what holds it together.
If you have chaos all the time, it's over. If you have order all the time, it's over. I mean, it's impossible. Even at this level, the second law of thermodynamics, entropy, prevents things being in order all the time. So nobody's meant to be perfect, and we're meant to come back in touch with ourselves, which we were, by the way, when we were children. I'm watching my son. He's two years old. He still hasn't forgotten. He hasn't dialed up the amnesia all the way up yet. There it is again. He hasn't forgotten how to not be himself. And a part of my role is, I've messed up quite a few times already, and I'm at total peace with that. I cannot be perfect. And I'll mess up again, and I'll mess up again. But one of my intentions is to help him remember as much as possible of his most natural state of curiosity, just innate curiosity, wonder,
openness.
Openness, transparency, an expression in the moment instead of zapping and editing himself and making sure that he fits in and is acceptable. All the roles that we're playing in, you know, adults. That is my one of my intentions with him, to help him remember as much as he now knows, and to not be in his way and slap onto him all the crap that I got, that I've been dealt. Letting go of. Exactly.
And loaded on. Yeah. Like, again, my old teacher, what he used to say is, and as kids, we can't protect ourselves well enough from that. But as an adult, you could definitely do that. And it's something about the toxic people. He says, imagine this, you're walking through the world and you have a bag of bricks or bag of stones, or let's say bricks, you have a bag of bricks on your back and you're walking around and you're watching people and they all have their bag of bricks on their back. We all do. But the one thing, the first thing that everybody wants is to give you their brick. And you're like, no, thank you. I have my own bricks. I don't need your brick. Don't bring that to me. Here's your brick back. Keep it. Don't accept the bricks from other people.
Do you want to hear something which some people will call magical, but it's actually the normal way of how things are? When you're dialed in to who you truly are, and when you're self-authorized and self-expressed, and you're, of course, being that and doing that from a place of peaceful power and grace and empathy and tolerance, but you are doing you, when you're dialed into your own innate frequency, when you're your truest self, you don't have to talk to people and their backs. They just don't come close to you. People feel other people's frequency. If you are yourself, your world will sort itself out for you. You don't have to do anything. People will find their way closer to you, those that belong to your journey, or away from you automatically. That's the beauty of it. You don't have to tell anybody anything. You don't have to have difficult conversations. The universe has them for you. You have them for you by being who you are, not by opening your mouth and communicating. You just do you and let others figure out their journey. And somebody's like, I don't like you. That's fine. You don't have to look at me. You can look in the other direction.
The world is big enough.
I mean, why would you want to stay in pain and suffering by looking at me if you know that this causes you pain? I don't understand that. But you're free to do that if you want to.
No, absolutely.
So you just do you and let others take care of themselves, and you're zero responsible for how they choose to feel around you. In fact, that's a form of service, because if they choose to feel themselves as less than optimal or optimally around you, that is a reminder for something that's still preventing them from experiencing their own authenticity fully. And if they pay attention, that may serve them. If not, somebody else has to remind them again and again and again. One day they'll pay attention. Yeah, but your service has been done.
You don't have to seek approval from everybody.
You don't have to seek approval from nobody.
Yeah, no, but people go around.
As long as you approve of yourself.
Yeah, people go around, try to belong. They try to look, you know, like, oh, well, you know, I want to be liked by those people. It's like,
listen, no. I'm not going to sit here as some kind of a, you know, all wise guy. I did that for decades. And I love my father to pieces. He's a beautiful human being, but he had the awareness he had at the time, and that's that. And he did the best he could with me at the time. That's that. I'm in full peace around that. But he, when he was young, he was a disciplinarian, and he wanted only the best, and nothing else was accepted. Very much like you. If I was doing great, that was the normal. That was the expected. No praise, no nothing. But if it was 1 degree less of perfect,
you're worthless.
Yeah. And the thing that I heard the most often, or maybe it was just etched into my subconscious in the deepest, was you will never amount to anything in life. And back there in communism, he used the saying, the most you will amount to is a trolley driver. You know, in Europe, we have the trams.
Yep.
And so that, I guess that was one of the miserable and low paying positions back in communism. So that was his saying.
Well,
you'll never amount to anything in life. That's the proof.
In Czech Republic, it was the Czech word popelaři, which was garbage guys. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, they used to take a lot of ashes out. So it was like the ash guy, because when people were heating their homes. So, well, you're going to be a dirty ash guy, ash garbage guy. So that was that instead of tram driver. But I heard that plenty of times.
Yeah. So there it is. That's what came from my dad. And the rest of the story is I had to become a perfectionist. And as a perfectionist, I had to be also a people pleaser, because I couldn't afford anything else but a perfect response to who I was, because that subconsciously was dangerous to me. Because if my father does not accept me, subconsciously it's death, because I'm totally dependent on my father and my mother. And so that's why we learn these compensation patterns. That's why we go through these ill-adapted adaptations as children, because of survival. And I can go into that. By the way, that's something that I developed in my new authenticity mini course, the two sources of inauthenticity. One of them is very young children, we trade our innate authenticity for attachment to our parents, because attachment means survival. Securing that bond with our parents, yes, it's very primal. We don't think about these things. It's instinctive. It's every animal is like that. Yep. Exactly. And so when our parents cannot handle our authenticity, and they, you know, they come at us in a way that we don't understand.
Headbutting way.
We instinctively know this is dangerous for me to be myself, and it can cut me from my survival source, which is my parents. Therefore, I cannot do that anymore. And so over time, we keep trading our authentic traits for attachment to our parents, for securing that bond. And that's how we let go of our authenticity. And well, there is another aspect, but this is a main aspect. And I share both sources of inauthenticity in my mini course, which, by the way, you've done, so you know that already.
Yeah, I went through so far half of it. I'm looking forward to finishing it probably today, later this afternoon, but I want to know exactly which way you have it and stuff. And I think it's amazing. I mean, I think it's a lot, very closely related to what we're all talking about here. I mean, both of us, but, you know, yeah, it's definitely, it's got value and it's deep thought in it. And, hey, you did a great job, I think. I mean, definitely.
Well, I mean, just this should invite so much self-compassion and self-forgiveness and understanding. You know, this is one of the things that I didn't understand for a long time, but now I kind of don't like to see, and it's one of my missions to help people understand this, is when they hear about authenticity, when they hear others talk about authenticity, or they live by their own signal, they are their authentic selves, and they go, how have they done it? Why did it happen to me that I'm a people pleaser? I'm agreeable. I'm a yes person. Why cannot I not be like them? And they assume that a lot of people are just less misfortunate than them, and they don't have to do anything. Just knowing this tells you that pretty much all of us had to trade our authenticity for survival. Pretty much all of us. Some of us compensated all the way to the other side when they became rebels and they became self-expressed in a different way. But that's not authentic, because they're also compensating. it's still a survival strategy. Whether somebody became a people pleaser and a yes person and an agreeable person, or they became a complete rebel, both of them are inauthentic because both of them are survival strategies. So the key is to find our path backs. It's very interesting, but we start over here and then we lose it and we spend our entire lives coming back to where we started, but with the wisdom that we have as adults.
Yeah, no, this brings me to another experience of mine in my life. One of my exes, she was brought up in the family in a very deeply religious sect family. And I'm not going to mention which sect it was, but it was pretty big, but we don't want to get into the details and name any particulars. But she basically did not like that deep, strict, religious life, family setting where she was stripped of herself. And so she went on after she broke away from her father and from the family, sort of. She stayed in touch just very remotely, but she started spending her life getting away from that. And she started living life like she made a decision. She says, well, I'm going to meet somebody this, but how would that be looked at over there? And I don't want them to approve of what I'm doing. And I'm like, well, but what you're doing now is you're actually still being controlled by this sect, except in pleasing them, you're trying to make them mad. So unless you let go of both, you're never going to find inner peace.
Yeah, so exactly.
How's that going to the extreme? It's like, you know.
It's either falling for it fully or rejecting it so vehemently that your philosophy becomes, I'm against that, but that's still not you.
And you're still being controlled by it.
Exactly. Exactly. You're still like, not free.
You got away from it, but you're willingly still in control, you know, under the control of your mind control, whatever is by them still.
Yeah, so. Like the story of the two twin brothers. That's a real story, by the way, where one of them ended up in jail. The other one ended up a very successful businessman. And they went to study both. And they went to the brother in jail and asked him, how did you end up in jail? What? And he's like, well, my father was an alcoholic, abusive, strict with us, very tough with us. That's the example I got. What do you expect from me? That's what I became. And they went to the other brother and asked him the same question. He said, well, my father was alcoholic, abusive, the toughest guy, beat us all the time. I knew exactly who I don't want to be. And that's what I became. I made sure I'm not that. And so both of them were compensating. Both of them, just one of them went to this side fully and the other one went to that side fully. But neither one is free.
Yep.
Because both of them are still trying to not be that or to be that exactly. Not
to please or unplease.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, exactly. You never leave it. I mean, that's what you got to look inside yourself and again, come into, see, listen, this is makes me happy, or is it, you know, and just look at it from your own perspective. That's, I think, is important. And I think that's what your course basically also talks about right from the start is just, you know, don't look for approval or disapproval of others. Look what makes you, and that's what we covered early on here too, is don't do things just to make other just to don't stop keeping up with the Joneses, as it says in the US. It's like, you know, well, you know, they got the new car and we got the same car. I don't know how it was in Bulgaria, but I think it was the same when you're living in the project buildings and, you know, your third floor neighbor got a color TV and the whole building sees you and says, hey, listen, how come the guy on the third floor has a color TV and we don't have that yet?
Man, we only had these three Russian cars and the two Fiats, the Polish Fiats and Škoda, the Czech, these. And the wait time was from a couple of years to 18 years, I think, for the Lada, the Russian Lada. Yeah, my father had to put my name when I was born so that when I'm 18, my turn comes to get a Lada.
Yeah.
But he got a ZAS, Zaporozhets.
Right.
And for that, he only had to wait several months. And Zaporozhets, by the way, I think it was the T-55 tank, the Russian tank. They took this smaller engine that
cranks the big diesel engine to get it started and said, what do we do with it? Well, let's put it in a little can and we'll call this a car. And that's what they called the Zaporozhets. It was, and that's what I learned to drive on, by the way.
Back then people had wait lists and they were selling their position. I'm number 55, exactly. How much you pay? And so it was a black market with a waiting list for cars.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was the funny part of one of the funny parts of communism. We're not going to go deeper into that.
No.
But I have to jump off the call in about 5 minutes.
Just with the communism, that's what gives people those different mindsets. That's just, you know, you just can't go out this way. So you get to adapt and you have, it's part of the mentality
that's why we're having this conversation today, right? Yeah. If we could go back and give ourselves advice or be born in another country, we wouldn't have this conversation. And maybe we added value to somebody else's life today. Maybe we didn't, but maybe we did. And so we wouldn't have been able to unless we went through that. And so do we want to change any of it? No. In fact, we chose this experience, but that's a very high level and woo-woo for some people, especially on LinkedIn. We chose these experiences. We planned them before we jumped into these little physical bodies to run around in them. Yes. So it's all carefully planned. But again, we had to forget so we can have the surprise. Otherwise, it's all known. It's not funny.
A lot of it is choice. And it's choice even. And exactly. It's a certain things we is not for, you know, it's the higher level stuff, sort of, when you get to fully understand it. You have to first, again, back to my meditation days and stuff. It's or training days with Zen. Not that I don't meditate anymore, but I mean, my teenage years, I guess that's the best way to say it. But kind of, you start off like here, so you're on level one. Then you break through your mental blocks and whatever you have in your brain, and you open up new doors, and you go to level two. The fact is, the door from level one to level two stays open. You don't see what's in level three until you break through. So you go to level three, and then you see what happened level two and level one. And that's how you make your way up. But you can't bring in somebody who's on level one or even 99, and you're level 105. You can't talk to, you can't explain to people what's happening on level 105 if they're on 99. You know, it's kind of like... It's hard to have that conversation. It's why, and that's, again, I'm going to bring this back to your mini course. I would start there. To break through and open up the pathway to another sort of a level or dimension of the mind. And yeah, you slowly progress and you get to understand things from a broader perspective. But you have to start everybody starts at level one. That's how it is. When you're born, you start at level one. Some may innately be at level two or three, but that's not really, you know, that's not something we can count on. And so you have to go break these different levels. An interesting thing in meditation is every time you break through the level in a meditation, you know it, because you get this huge inner feeling of it's an enormous energy rush. It's like, and then you live off of that. You basically go, it's kind of like drinking 20 coffees at once. That's what you feel when you get to that level two, level three, and next, the next level. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So if people wonder, like, well, how do I know that advanced? You will know.
Yeah. And then the saying goes, once you see something, you cannot unsee it. So it's there.
Yeah.
The thing is to break through so you can see it.
Yeah. And that's why, like I said, that's why I think your mini course is great for people to start someplace to get in touch with them. And you call it authenticity. I call it sort of enlightenment, I guess you can say. But
oh man, you're generous.
But no, definitely it starts with you, and you do have principles of meditation in there too. So you're telling people just meditate, just think. It's not a meditation course, but yeah, you put that principle in there and people should definitely. Well,
the only meditation, if that is just 60 seconds long, and I don't know if you've gone through it already, but it's the fastest meditation you'll ever do, and it'll probably be the most transformational meditation you'll ever do, because it'll open up a completely new perspective, but again, it's there. The course is closed for, it's not open for enrollment, but there is a wait list. There is an interest page where people can put in their name and email address, and at the time, at least at this recording. And next time I open it up, maybe in a few weeks again, for a few days, I will email them that it's now open for enrollment again. And it's very accessible. So
no, it's easy to use.
I mean, easy it's, to go it's, yeah, it's the whole duration of the videos is less than 75 minutes. And as far as the fee to get in, it's super accessible. So there is no reason not to, but again, it's not about that. It's about people's individual paths. And so it will speak to some people and it won't speak to some people. It doesn't matter how long or short it is and how much time or how little time it takes or what it costs to get in. If it speaks to a person when they hear about that and they read about that, then they know because they get an internal yes. And if it doesn't and they have to start justifying why it's good or not good, that's an automatic no. It's very easy to tell. Very easy to tell.
Yeah. And just with the meditation you had,
please don't tell what it is because it has to be a surprise when people.
Right. So
don't disclose. Say, yeah. No problem. Don't say what it
but
is.
But it's something that I've done years ago. And it's basically that is one of the levels that has helped me to get to another level is because that's something you really have to focus on. And I did not spend a minute on it. I probably spent hours and hours just on that one idea. And yeah. Because it's not a 1 minute is not enough. I can tell you right now.
One minute is the inoculation. Let's put it that way. That's why it has to be hidden until it happens because it has to hit very hard and it does hit very hard.
Yes.
And then you can go back to that same idea and
that's what I
did inside of it, but the inoculation happens in 60 seconds.
Exactly. That's what I did years ago, and that's why I say, like you said, do it. I was like, I already know the answer, so I understood it fully and I understood where you're going with it, and I'm like, that is probably the best place to start for anything.
I still do these 60 seconds to this day. Very often. I'm not gonna say daily because it's not daily, but very often.
I do it while I'm driving. I think about all these things, all the relations to that and whatever is I always
don't give it out.
No. I'm just saying it's like there's a lot it's connected to a lot of things, and that's why I basically ever since I was 17 or 18, it's on my mind. And I've been living with that for the last 30 something years. So that's why it's important for you to point it out. And that's why I said, I think it is the greatest. So far was one of the highlights in the mini course that I've gone through. And I think that's why it's important for people to go and see it and to think about everything.
I mean, yeah,
opening up.
I'm not going to spend much time promoting it. There is a lot more for a mini course there, but anyway, I'm going to pause right here. If somebody's interested, the way they can find out about it, I guess the way they can find out about me is just on LinkedIn, my profile. And
exactly.
I'm beginning to check out here because I said only 5 minutes and it's been almost 10 minutes and I have to jump off and go collect my baby, be the father that I want to be for him. But yeah, if people want to find me, I guess the best way is through LinkedIn, my profile. That's going to be the most updated place for them to know what's happening and what I'm offering and what I'm available for and how I help and what I assist people with. And man, thank you so much for
most up-to-date information.
What is that?
Most up-to-date information.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to thank you, Carol, for providing this little platform today so I can express freely and openly with people and polarize a little bit maybe and make those who are undecided decide about what they want to do around me. So thank you for that. Hopefully I introduced a couple ideas and I appreciate your wisdom that you shared and you introduced quite a few powerful ideas. So thank you for leading this conversation to beautiful places. I appreciate it, man. And I'll follow up later to see if there are people with feedback and how I can learn
comments
or support. Absolutely.
Comments and reaching out and everything else. No, great. Yeah, and we could continue. Everybody has questions they can ask in the comments in the LinkedIn and and connect with you. And
I'll catch up with you questions later.
Thank you for accepting my invitation as well, because I mean, I always like to get into these little deeper conversations other than just the regular weather chit chat that you get.
No, that's you can't find me there.
Yeah, so let's hope you open up some minds, and maybe we could do this again in a couple of weeks or month or something. Next time you're ready to open up the course, we could do that again.
Let's follow the crumb trail, and we'll know exactly what we're guided towards. Thank you, Carol. Carol, I appreciate you and appreciate your audience, man. And thank you for everybody who chose to donate and give us a few minutes of their time. I don't take this lightly. That's an honor for me. So thank you very much. And I'm going to jump now.
Yep, same for me. We got to go. Thanks. Have a great one. Bye.
Peace.